Chapter 21, The Lost Days. I awaken from my blackout without hangover. As always, I feel fresh as a newborn. Of course, I have no memory, only the knowledge that I was happy where I was, and now I'm sad that I am back. In the way that a man, upon awakening, will feel nostalgia for his wonderful dream, even though it is forgotten before his feet hit the hard floor of his hard house. I know time has passed, and I know that I am lying fully clothed in a bathtub. I am cold, and it is hard to get up and stand. When I finally manage it, I look in the full-length mirror and am shocked. My face has some scabs, the small kind you get from falling on pavement, and I am bruised about the jaw and cheekbones. But I have come out of blackouts worse than that. What alarms me is that I am now a big fat guy. I have to have gained 75 pounds. Adam Egget, I scream, and he comes in from the other room. I ask him the date, and he tells me, that's over a month. Over a month I've been blacked out? A month is a long time, and it feels even longer in Las Vegas, where a lot can change in very little time. Tell me what happened, Adam Egget. How bad was it? Adam Egget yawns. Are you kidding? You couldn't lose. You don't remember it at all? No, none of it, I laugh. But from the look of my round belly and my extra chin, I'm a prosperous man. I laugh some more and dance around the room. I'm going to go hit the tables. Where the hell's my money? I'm sorry, Norm, but Gabe insisted all the money be kept in the safe. Ha ha! Well, don't worry about it, friend. Gabe is a smart man, I say. Come and sit now, Adam Egget, and tell me exactly what I have been up to this past month. I sit on the edge of a chair and listen to my forgotten adventure. And what a picture Adam Egget paints. I had visited every casino on the strip with my two pals in tow. I had taken up with a beautiful Cree girl that I was set to marry, but then I got cold feet and may have lost the love of my life. I had outdrunk a local pimp who then went after me with a knife and almost killed me, but Gabe had used martial arts on this gentleman of leisure, and for that I owed him my life. I finally ended up here at Harrah's, where I'd been the talk of the floor, a man blind drunk who couldn't lose, who would hit 19 and find a 2. It all sounds wonderful, but part of me is sad, sad that it is another splinter of my life that has happened and I will never remember it, another splinter that I have to take another person's word for. I'm going to quit drinking and be just like you, Adam Egget. We both laugh hard at that one. As we dance and laugh, Gabe walks in, and he is carrying 2 bags from 7-Eleven. He empties them into the middle of the room. Food spills everywhere. There are Twizzlers and Butterfingers, Rolos and Creamsicles and Paydays, and more and more and more. There you go, fatso. That ought to hold you for a while. He's back, Gabe. He's back. Yeah, I'm back, I say. I'm sorry I missed out on all the fun. Adam Egget says we've been to every casino in town. Yep, says Gabe. Listen, Gabe, I really want to thank you for taking care of that knife-wielding pimp I outdrank. Yeah, don't mention it. I never liked pimps, says Gabe. Love should never be for sale. Gabe is always saying wise words like these. Words that you'd expect to see on a T-shirt or a coffee mug. I want to know if I'd made the million yet, and if not, how close I am. How much did I win, Gabe? How much did I win? Gabe just looks at me. How much did you win? You black out on whiskey and expect to wake up in a bed of cash? No, you wake up in a cold, hard bathtub, which is what you did. But Adam Egget told me I couldn't lose. Adam Egget has 2 Entenmann's donuts in his mouth. Oh, I was just talking about last night, Norm. You couldn't lose last night. Sorry for the misunderstanding. Sorry for the misunderstanding! I leap across the room and am on Adam Egget and choking him but his ubiquitous sweat protects him. It's like trying to keep hold of a greased pig. But I stay on top of him and finally have him pinned to the floor. I'm throwing punches, and Adam Egan is whimpering and crying, and I keep screaming, "Sorry for the misunderstanding!" I feel Gabe on my back trying to pry me loose, but my enormous girth prevents anything of the sort. It seems like Adam Egan is certain to die by my hand, but Gabe finally hits me across the back with a chair. The chair does not smash to pieces like in the movies, so he just keeps hitting me with it, until finally I roll over, finished. Gabe places the chair back where he found it. The chair looks fine. It hasn't lost a single splinter. I can barely breathe. "Where do I stand, Gabe?" "You've worn out your credit at every casino. You owe $1 million, and you have roughly 70,000 from your hot streak last night." I try to get up, but I'm not used to all the extra weight, and my knees buckle. I crawl to the candy and empty a pack of Junior Mints in my mouth, then begin to unwrap a Butterfinger. Why am I eating like this, Gabe? What's going on? "I've been thinking on that," says Gabe. "Did you ever see the movie Milk?" "I love milk," says Adam Egan. "Right," Gabe says, "but you mean you love to drink it out of a glass, or maybe put it on your cereal?" "Oh, yes," says Adam Egan. "Well, this movie, Milk, it has nothing to do with that. It's about a politician in San Francisco who is killed by this crazy guy. And it was a true story. So when this guy goes on trial, the media dubs it the Twinkie defense, because this crazy guy ate a lot of Twinkies. But the media had it all wrong. They said the defense was claiming eating Twinkies made their client crazy. What the defense was really saying was that eating a lot of junk food was a symptom of mental illness. That when you're going crazy, your brain craves sugar." "Gabe, you trying to tell me I went crazy?" "You went crazy, and you went fat." "I can still win, Gabe." Gabe puts his mouth close to my ear. "It may be time to begin readying yourself for Plan B." Adam Egan and I take the last $70,000 over to the craps table. I bet $5,000 on every number, so I have $30,000 on the table. I know as I do it, I am out of control, but I cannot stop. Gabe was right, I'm still on tilt. My only hope now is to hit a run of good luck. Hitting a run of good luck at the exact time you are on tilt can make you a fortune fast. But instead, I watch as my bankroll goes up, then down, then up again, and I think how this will likely be the last time I place money on a game of chance. I remember a psychiatrist once telling me that I gamble in order to escape the reality of life, and I told him that's why everyone does everything. But I've had plenty of wasted nights after losses and bigger losses to consider the question more seriously. So why the attraction? Most people would think it's the wins that keep the gambler going, but any gambler knows this is not true. As you place your chips on the craps table, you feel anxiety and impatience. When the red dice hit the green felt with a thunk, and you're declared the winner, and the chips are pushed toward you, you feel relief. Relief is all, and relief is fine, but hardly what a man would give the whole rest of his life to gain. It has to be something else, and the best I have come up with is this. It is a particular moment, a magic moment, that occurs after the placing of a bet and before the result of that bet. It is after the red dice are thrown, but before they lie still on the green felt where they fall. It is when the dice are in the air, and as long as they are there, time stops. As long as the red dice are in the air, the gambler has hope. And hope is a wonderful thing to be addicted to. Better luck next time, sir. In a casino, these are the words that tell you that you are broke. Better luck next time, sir. I stumble over to a chair by the slots. I light a cigarette and take a deep drag. When the casino takes all I have, I usually feel lost and don't know what to do, but this time is different. I know exactly what to do. I have Plan B. I find Adam Egott by the video Kino machine and take the news that he is up $1.85 in stride. Adam Egott, listen to me. Go now and find the man you think is a lady and stay with her somewhere, downtown. Somewhere you will be noticed. Start a fight in public. Make yourself seen. Tomorrow evening, return here and find me in my bed. Gotcha, boss. And Adam Egott turns on his heel to leave. Whoa, 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 whoa! That's it? That's all you have to say? Yeah. I mean, I'm going to see it tomorrow night. You never really understood Plan B, did you, Adam Egott? Not really. And so I have to explain the plan again to Adam Egott. And when he finally understands it, he begins to weep like a woman and asks me to promise that I will do no harm to myself. I will not promise that, Adam Egott. It goes against everything Plan B stands for. But remember this. When you come back tomorrow, it will not be me you find in the hotel room bed. And then I have him touch the flesh of my arm and the bones underneath. But only these clothes I wear. Adam Egott goes off into the night, and I go to my room. I sit on the edge of my bed and open the drawer. I take out the 600 milligrams of Dilaudid, the fresh Surette, and the Gideon's Bible. I read a few of my favorite scripture passages as I prepare the Surettes. And then I inject myself with the lethal dose of Dilaudid. I fall to my knees and rest my elbows on the bed. I pray forgiveness for what I am doing. And then I feel joy and peace fill my soul as my consciousness quietly drifts away. And then I don't die.